Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the show. Today is Friday, July the 28th, 2017. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. And I'm going to talk for a few minutes, because Michael is busy doing something else outside for the moment. We're finishing up a few tasks here at my parents' farm in Jonesville, Virginia. And by noon tomorrow, we will be headed to Asheville, North Carolina. So keep us in your prayers while we travel. And we will be in Asheville starting on Sunday morning. We'll be doing the Sunday morning service, followed by a Why Again workshop. All the flyers are on the website. I actually have one that I'm getting ready to put out there. We had some changes in Lansing. On the website, it just talks about fellowship for today and 4 free workshops, but they are now being co-sponsored by Unity of Lansing as well. So part of those will be at the Unity Church, and part of them will be at Fellowship for Today. So I'll get that new flyer out there before the end of the day. But otherwise, we're going to be in what's called Mills River, the Unity of Blue Ridge, and that is just outside of Asheville, North Carolina, and we're there from July 30th through August the 5th. And then we'll be going over to Franklin, North Carolina for 3 days for 3 workshops, and then moving to Nashville, and then on up to Lansing, Michigan, and Ada, Michigan, and Muskegon. And then we'll be doing the intensives in Williamston. Thank you, Michelle Pichet. Then from there, we will be moving down. And the breaker just flipped, so I've lost power. But anyway, thank goodness the cell phone's still going. And then we'll be heading probably through Virginia and down into North Carolina, and hopefully doing the spring intensives on Oak Island like we did last year. And so we're looking forward to all of that. And apologies in the chat room. Just lost internet connection, so hopefully I'll get that back up here soon. I think I even lost connection with the switchboard. I'm not sure. Dr. Tim, are you still on?
I am here.
Oh, good. Then I didn't totally lose everything.
When I heard that from you, I decided to open up the studio.
Oh, I'm glad you did. Michael's working on the breaker. It keeps flipping, and so he'll be with us here shortly. But I'm using my phone as my internet connection, because we don't have internet out here on the farm. And so my phone was just about to die right before the show, and so I thought, oh no, if my phone dies, I'll lose internet. So anyway, we're all still here, and I'm glad. So welcome, Dr. Tim, while I got you here. Just let's say hello, and how's things going for you? You had another support group last night.
Yes, we did. We had a continuing discussion about the Tuesday group, which a couple said was very stimulating for them, and the idea of getting a deeper sense of how we create our own realities and how the internal best guesses that we make are probably even more important than the outside signals, the outside events themselves. And then we watched Guy Finley talk, and then we drew all the parallels that we could about his message being the very same thing, that it's all an inside job, and if I step into that realization, then there's something I can do about it, which is mostly drop all of the false egoic stuff. And as you might imagine, if we're talking about human beings having to drop their sense of self and their everything they're attached to and all of the relationships they think are so important to them, and it stirs things up. So we had a very productive discussion. And I highly recommend it, as I often say when we talk about this. If you don't have a support group near you, I recommend starting one. And if you have one, I recommend attending it as often as possible, because the practice with the tools is the thing that produces results. Reading about it doesn't get me there. Hearing somebody talk about it on the radio doesn't get me there. Actually practicing the tools changes my life. So that's my offering for today.
So some of the people then that were at your Tuesday group came back Thursday for a continuation?
Yeah. I have some people that come to both, and
that's
some
awesome.
People that just come to one or the other. You know, it all depends on their schedules at different times and what's happening with their children or their spouses or their work. But, you know, as I've often said in my blog posts, I put out another blog post about the writing that Sharon did on becoming real, and a blog post about my Sunday talk at the Unity in Rockford. And occasionally I'll just put out a blog post that says, I feel so grateful to have people come to these support groups and just first carve out the time to do something outside what the culture would demand, that we sit home and watch TV and become good consumers. And secondly, that they show up and they're so loving and supportive of each other. Increasingly there's less and less for me to do as a moderator, because the people who come time after time, week after week, are just so willing and loving and accepting of each other that it's just a blessing to be involved with people like that. So
that is awesome. That's awesome.
I agree.
So, Michael's close to being ready to get with us, but one of the things when you were talking about, you know, the discussion that you were having and being, you know, more aware of self and what we're projecting and what we're creating as our reality, it is amazing. You know, I work one-on-one with people, and sometimes what they come up with that is going on in the world is like so far different from what's really going on. But it's easier to see it in someone else than it is to see it when it's going on for us.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely designed that way. You know, the eyes point out, you know, they don't point in. And like Michael, in one of the older, I forget whether it was Healing Through Relationships or Codependence talks, he has the podium and he has somebody come up to join him, and they say, oh, so here's Sarah, and Sarah and I have this loving relationship and everything's going great, and then an issue comes up, and then Michael steps back and now the podium is between him and Sarah, and he says, and I look out through my eyes and I see Sarah and I see the problem and I know exactly whose problem it is. And that's, you know, it's a wonderful little demonstration of one of the core truths of our lives, is that we're conditioned to think we're separate from other people, and we aren't Our eyes are not trained to look inward. Our eyes are trained to look to the outside. And that's the biggest part of my work since doing any good psychological work or personal growth, and especially since meeting Michael with his work, is that I have to reverse that. I have to absolutely rewire my brain to know when there's discomfort inside me, my vision has to turn inward. My focus has to be on what am I doing to create this. And I have to interrupt the habit that's been drilled into me through conditioning over the years to look outside of me and think about who or what outside needs to change or that I need to get away from so that I don't have to feel this discomfort inside me. So, yeah, it's very easy for me to see how other people are creating a problem and how they're not running their life right. And you know what? I know pretty well what everybody needs to do to run their life better. The problem is I don't know what I need to do. I don't know what I need to do to run my life better, but I sure know what everybody else needs to do.
And I think, you know, actually when we're giving someone else advice, it seems like for me anyway, even when I'm working with someone, you know, one-on-one, they're – the issue that is up in their face at the moment is something that I have either dealt with recently or currently dealing with. And so it's like I get to see my advice to them how, oh, I could use that. Of course, I don't tell them that at the moment, but I make a note of it because it's like, you know, I'm really giving somebody else advice that I need to hear.
Well, and we've talked about this before on the show, and I've said it, and it shocks people sometimes that I say, even in my role as a licensed clinical psychologist, if I'm having a good day, when I hear myself say to somebody, you know, you really need to, whatever follows that statement might be good for them, but it's perfect for me. It's absolutely perfect for me. And if I'm having a good day, there's a part of my mind that grabs that and says, oh, okay. And one of the examples I used is not too many years ago, because I don't usually sit in a session and give people advice. I feed back to them what they've said. I teach them a new tool. I suggest they might want to look into this or that. So I know that with practice, I'm able to catch myself when I say to somebody, you know, you really need to. And a few years ago, I heard myself say to somebody, you know, you really need to carve out more time for quality time with the primary relationships in your life. And quite literally, it was like a hand knocking on the back of my head saying to me, okay, Tim, where in your life do you need to spend more quality time with your primary relationships? Is it with your sons? Is it with your mother? Is it with this? And that has led to a whole nother level of improving my life experience day to day. It's a wonderful little trick, that regulatory speech that can be tuned so that I can start picking up any hint that I'm telling somebody that they need to do this, they need to do that. They need to pray, they need to meditate, they need to stay away from the negatives, they need to put more positives in their lives. Whatever, when I'm giving that advice, literally on a good day, I'll hear it. And it'll wake me up to the fact that, oh, Tim, this is your unconscious trying to get you to see this is what you need to do. This is the perfect advice for you.
It's like that turnaround column in the codependence worksheet that we do where, you know, we say what triggered us and, you know, what the issue was and our advice to them and our punishment to them. And it always turns around that our advice to them is actually advice to ourselves. And some people have a challenge seeing that. You know, it's like maybe you've put down your advice to them is to be honest or to trust you or to, you know, respect you or honor you or love you or whatever. And to turn that around and say, well, how do I not honor myself or love myself or respect myself or trust my own intuition or whatever? And just to turn that around and say, okay, this is advice to me. And that's always a big aha when people really get it.
Yeah, it's a 180 from what the culture has conditioned me to do. And I, you know, it's exactly the same thing as that piece of advice. And one of the things I used to say to people is, I will never be upset. about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. And then along comes Michael with his codependence to interdependence worksheet, and it's got that same core truth in the worksheet where I outline everybody that's ever offended me, what they did to offend me, what my punishment thought is for them, what my advice is for them, and the last column is how I'm going to apply my advice to them in my life. Because it might be good advice for them, and at the same time, it's perfect advice for me. Yeah, it's the very same tool. And there's all kinds of wonderful ways to apply it if we get creative.
Exactly.
Tim, we were at a church out west and presented the codependence workshop. And had a really good turnout. There were probably 150 people in the room, and the minister of the church was there. It was the last evening. It was a Friday night, and the minister had been there all week. And when I did that piece in the worksheet and put forward the idea that, you know, the third level of behavior, what Alter says, you should do what your power person did that you hated the most, he just, I mean, blurted out loud, "Oh, my God," in the whole room in front of the congregation. And then he never spoke to me again. Actually, he did. He started speaking to me again about 2 years ago, but this was back 5 or 6 years ago. It can be a shock to the mind, and, of course, understanding why and how that works. I mean, how can I say to somebody, "I know for sure if you're giving somebody else advice, you need to follow that advice"? Well, the only way that in my mind, when you understand the whole way, you know, the last couple of days we've been talking about the hallucinations of the mind and how the mind literally constructs the world that we see. If I can see someone doing something, it's because I have a construct in my mind that allows me to see it. I've got the brain cells for it. Of course, there are two places I can see it from. One is I'm still in the middle of my muddle and I'm really disturbed, and I think I'm disturbed about them, but I'm disturbed about my own inner muddle. Or if I've done my work around that, it doesn't mean it doesn't happen in the world. It doesn't mean I can't see it, but I can see it from a point of view where I maintain the active presence of love. Therefore, I can be a space of support for healing it. When I haven't resolved it, I'm still in the middle of my muddle, and you know, my guidance is not going to work very well when I have an internal muddle happening, because the minute I get on a particular topic, there's no choice about what resonates in me. Everything that relates to that topic is going to move in me. And if it moves with some form of hostility or fear, then that's going to tend to interfere with the guidance system and leave me without true guidance, because I've still got another piece of work to do. So it's awesome to have the brain cells and to understand that and be able to put it to work. And, of course, sometimes it has to come around many, many times before we really get it and go, Oh, that's mine. Oh, no. And then the next piece of work, next level of work. Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome and pretty sweet. So, Dr. Tim, any other thoughts for you today, sir? Any insights? I missed the first part of the show. We had a little fiasco here with power outage, and so life in the country.
Well, I feel complete about what we've shared so far, and I have the switchboard up in case Jeannie doesn't have power or access. So I'm acting as a backup
for that. I
think
we got it resolved. Thank you. I think we got it resolved. I actually, we're making distilled water, and on the same circuit, I plugged in the blender, and the blender's kind of heavy duty, and it overloaded it. And so I think we've got that one resolved, fortunately.
Okay, well, we have, you know, 17 people on the switchboard alone, and I don't know about the chat room, but...
see if there's anybody who has a question for us.
Just press 1. It's 563-999-3581. If you press 1, we'll see your hand up and announce you by your area code. And... make this show alive. Let us know what's going on with you. Testimonials or questions or...
Anything happening in the chat room, Jeannie?
I wonder if there's anybody else. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say Donna and Kathy and I are the only three in the chat room, and that just made me think. I was just going to announce that Donna's been with us almost all the time. I mean, she's just at every chance that she's not in class, she is in the chat room. She's called in several times, and she's a great supporter of the radio show, even financially. And she is agreed to be a third backup. It's only happened once that I couldn't have either Michelle or Tim back up for us, and that left you to do the whole thing, Michael. But she's agreed to do this. Yeah, so she's agreed to do the switchboard and learn how to do all that, so we have another backup in case we need it. So Monday, she's going to do her first run on the switchboard. I'm going to be there as a visual, but I'm going to let her run it. So we thank you, Donna, for being willing to step in and do that. Yeah, and we do have a hand up. I think it's Miss Julie. She's going to keep us busy this week. Hey, Julie, welcome to the show.
Julie is in a sensitive period, in process, and that's awesome.
Yes, absolutely. It's great.
Hey, young lady. We're waiting for your sweet voice.
She's gotten so used to pressing one.
I was on mute
automatically.
Hello, I'm back. I'm here.
You're challenging.
I was saying thank you for what you were saying, and then what came out of my mouth was, I feel bad. I think I'm taking up too much time on your show. Then I caught that, and then I said, well, I don't know what I said, but I did catch that. So I appreciate being able to speak. And I want to just give you one quick little follow-up. I caught myself yesterday, kind of, let's just say, a road rage example, which I usually don't spend a lot of time putting road rage into my life, but there was an opportunity yesterday, and I just totally blurted something out of my mouth. And had fun doing it and thought it was harmless and just, you know, silly me. And I caught it. And I caught that it shifted a little in that, you know, I recently just had that anger removed from me. And so it didn't have the juice that it usually has. And what I learned from it is that I'm still healing words now, patterns. But at least that juice is not as righteous, let's call it. You know, it's not there justifying my behavior. And that just feels like a miracle, and I'm really grateful for it. And just wanted to share that. And I'm, you know, in the light of, you know, wanting it for others also, you know. So, hi, and
awesome.
Thank you. And I can say goodbye, because I guess you may have others.
Okay.
Julie,
right.
I think that's
awesome.
For me, to point out that you release the anger part and the emotional charge to it, but that you're still working on the pattern of words that have been so ingrained. And that could actually be two different things. And so thank you for pointing that out. That was good for me.
Oh, good. Yeah, I was surprised by it, too. Yeah, thank you. Yes, well, off we go together, right? We go further together rather than quickly alone, right?
Absolutely.
That proverb.
Yay.
Yeah. You do sound wonderful, Jeannie. You sound really wonderful. Your lightness and happiness is
Thank you.
Resonating me. Thank you. I am enjoying that resonance. Oh, hey, you know how we talk about matching bags of garbage? Well, I know, Michael, one thing that's been really encouraging over the years from you in this work is that sometimes it's not always about, you know, the garbage and the hard things that we're trying to have removed, because sometimes the gifts appear. And, you know, and then maybe I was just thinking there could be matching gifts or matching bags of gifts.
Absolutely.
You know, and treasures. Yeah. So that's the, you know, the good news of, you know, that there's so much benefit and value and fullness that comes in to fill the space of what we remove, what we allow to be removed.
Well, you'll remember that, you know, it's just a couple of weeks ago we suggested to everybody that they work on a practice, and that was everybody they see, everybody they encounter, the person behind the counter at the grocery store, you know, the driver that brings up their rage, whatever, that they offer the thought, I cherish you. That's matching bags of beauty. You know, the truth is, we're all the same. We're all made of the same stuff. We all started out exactly the same as the active presence of love. And, you know, that lesson that I shared with you that we started off 30 years ago with the kids in that school in South Florida in Lessons in Living. You know, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. That's the matching bag of blessing. And when I choose love, you know, I can be in front of the most obstinate, angry, devilish person, quote-unquote, that I could possibly think of. And if I can stay focused and instead of buying into that bag of garbage with my own, having worked through it, if I can stand as that space of active love and continue to radiate that energy, that there's no choice in them about resonance. You know, the tuning fork, when you hit the middle C tuning fork on the desk and you put it in front of a second tuning fork, the second tuning fork doesn't have a choice. It's got to vibrate. So if I hold to love, and to me, that's the hope of critical mass. When Yeshua says, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. That's the hope of it all, that if we can get enough people who stand out of our matching bags of blessings, then 7.5 billion people in the world have to resonate to that. And when it gets to the amplitude within an individual that it is a stronger voice than the voice for hostility and fear, then it's heard. Then it can be acted upon. And that's the whole idea to me of critical mass. So when I offer that thought to, you know, the drunk in the gutter, the homeless man that I meet, the, you know, the street walker on the street corner, when I offer that, you are cherished. You are cherished, and I'm tapping into love. I'm moving in energy, and that energy has to have an impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so great to trust that and just be in the happiness of it ourselves in our own experience and know that that's all good going out there. It's spewing. The word isn't spewing, really. You know, it's extending and expanding love and
paradise.
Remember the other day I said something about the Jehovah's Witness and their version of paradise, and then I came away with that interaction with I remembered I had three P's, and it was practicing, presencing, paradise. And I put parties at the end, like having a party or a workshop or a get together, and let's just do that, whatever our version
paradise part
is. Presencing paradise.
Cool. Yep,
okay, I'm going to go because it gets old. My mind loves these little jingles, but I know. Okay, bye-bye, thanks.
All right, you have a blessed one. Take care.
You too.
When I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. And there's no choice about that. And of course, when I do it once or I do it twice, I say, oh, well, they haven't responded, so I'm going to stop now. Well, there's my next piece of work. My next piece of work. And of course, when you realize that you're working for all of the generations that have gone before you, it might take a little time, but that's okay. We've got time. So, Jeannie, anything happening in the chat room? Anybody with a hand up in the phone queue? Maybe Donna would like to hit one and just introduce herself and say hello so that on Monday folks will know who's behind the switchboard.
Okay.
Donna, would you like to do that?
She did say in the chat room that she's been practicing the You Are Cherished. And I am cherished, and we are cherished. And she said the energy in her changes immediately when she does that. And while we're waiting to see if she presses one and pops in, there's I did a search while you were talking about, you know, and you may not have even said it. It may have popped in my head anyway about the tall ships and people not seeing what's really there. And
right.
There was conversation going on, and it was pretty cute because the one person said, well, you know, that they might see the ship as far as that it was a thing there, but they wouldn't get it. they wouldn't know what the masts were or what the spars were or which end was the front, which end was the back or whatever, that it was just a big thing, said, kind of like an automobile engine is to me. I thought,
there you
go. I get that one too. And then the other person said, yeah, unless they could make the jump from a canoe to a galleon, you know, that it wouldn't make sense. And so sometimes it might be something that is actually seen but not understood. And hold just one moment. I believe that Miss Donna is with us here. Hold on just a second.
And Jeannie, what you're saying relates to the building of the brain cells for spiritual truth, because people may see it and they don't have a clue what it is or what it means or how to use it. And to me, that's the whole idea of the work, is to first develop the brain cell so that it can be observed as a phenomenon, and then to develop the brain cells to engage in the phenomenon, and then to awaken fully to the truth of who we are as the beings that create the phenomenon. So.
Right, exactly. And Donna's on.
Hey there, young lady.
Hi.
We'd love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe a little bit about your cherishing story, how that's been going for you.
Oh, it's been going pretty good. I listened to the previous show and heard that. So my voice might be a little rough. I've been doing a virtual training, and it changes if I'm sitting in the restaurant. And one of the things I began practicing when I wake up in the morning of setting that intention for me and putting that energy out there with the students, I've been doing a three-week virtual training where just speaking into the computer. So I've been doing a lot of the talking. And I've noticed when, especially when I just tap into that energy, of you are cherished, when I was having a difficult time with one of the students who really wasn't catching on. And I had to clear that energy within me and just say, you are cherished. And I choose to make this fun and easy, this experience right now, in this moment. And
right.
That shift within me, it just affected him and the entire class, and I just started setting that intention when I got up so that it would just be the entire time I'm on in class, since I've been in class. And so that's how it's been working for me, and real good inside.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, why don't you just kind of introduce yourself, because you're going to be coming to the show from time to time as operating the switchboard in the chat room, and so people maybe get to know you just a little bit.
Okay. I was originally living in Atlanta, moved to, the D.C. area last year in October, and been doing a lot of consciousness work, and this is some of the best I've encountered in reference to forgiveness. This really took me to that level. This was that peace that I was really missing, because I would be in that space where forgiving someone and I would still feel all messed up inside. And being with this work definitely helps me to be with myself, and even practicing the commitment and to be in the presence of energy by way of someone else, and to be able to say whether it's I'm cherished, and the commitment I have on a little 3x5, it really shifts the energy. And to be able to do the worksheet when something comes up has really taken me to a whole nother internal level. And I'm part of military. I was in the military for a couple of years, and so the worksheets have helped me to be with that energy within me as well. And the teaching or the training that I do is with military people as well from around the world. So that's a little bit about me. Anything else you'd like to know?
No, that's cool. Just so people kind of get a sense of who you are. And I think it's fabulous that you're taking that as a trainer. You know, I have a friend who's a military trainer in a slightly different way than you are. And a while back, he pasted a Facebook post where he's a former Marine and thinks that discipline and turning people into men by raging in their faces is something that's really, or used to think that, is really beneficial. And he actually posted a Facebook post where, I don't know, whatever military rank this person is, you can see his face is just like beet red, raging, clenched jaw in somebody who's obviously the superior head down, or the inferior head down, you know, subject. And I remember when he posted it proudly, one of his former victims, and I use that word quite lucidly, posted back, "Yeah, you made a man of me, thank you." And it's like, oh my God, such abuse. So to have somebody in that role that's introducing the presence of love and, you know, resonating and bringing back human life, what a hopeful thing that you're in there doing that. That's awesome.
And, you know, Michael, I have to say this. When I was in the Army, and I was in for about 24 years, and I remember I came in the late, I think it was around the 80s, and
right.
In contrast, I had someone, and he was a male, you know, we were all females, and he never raised his voice at us. He said he didn't believe in that. He said, "I think you can get people to do what they need to do without talking to them like they're dogs." And I can say most of my training and most of the people I encountered throughout my career tend to be on that type of vibration. So, I don't know.
Smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'm complete.
Well, that's hopeful. That's delightful. So I'm glad to hear that, because that's not the kind of feedback I've gotten from most people over the years who either were in the military or, children, the offspring of military over the years have dealt with so many people with so much trauma in that arena, from especially when Dad was military and, you know, brought that discipline home and or called it discipline. Of course, it had nothing to do with teaching what was proper. It had to do with, you know, in that context of, you know, an angry retribution for
yes.
If you don't do it perfectly. So that's hopeful to hear that's out there and hopefully growing.
Yes, and this goes back to what you always say and what I hear Dr. Tim say. It's really all about what's going on inside. Even before I came into the knowledge of your work, even it's all about what's going on in the consciousness of that person, because we don't have to be like that. And even for me to encounter someone like that who says he didn't believe in yelling at people, it's about what's going on inside of us. And we don't have to be that way, and we can make a choice, and we can choose to have a different experience. We don't have to. It doesn't have to be that way.
Absolutely. I agree. I hear you loud and clear.
So.
I'm with you. Cool. Well, welcome. We'll look forward to you doing the switchboard on Monday.
Thank you.
We'll have moved on down the road. We're in Jonesville, Virginia today, and tomorrow morning we'll be on the road and heading down to Asheville, and anybody who happens to be in the Asheville, North Carolina area, we'd invite you to come join us at Unity Blue Ridge down on the south side of town near the airport. We'll be doing the service in the morning and the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop in the afternoon, and then a full week of free workshops. So if you're in the Asheville area, come and play. And Jeannie, is there anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything else happening in the chat room?
Yes, we actually have two hands up, and I'm going to turn Michelle on. She was on hold the other day, practically the whole show, and didn't get on. So, Michelle, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Hi, this goes back, I think it was Monday or Tuesday. I believe Tim had read the Facebook post from a person, and you guys were discussing
right.
the idea about doing work and that. And in graduate school, to be, get a master's in psychology, that was like one of the biggest lessons they reiterated over and over and over. It was like the concept of doing your own work and being able to clear, which will allow you to expand your ability to hold the space of love for, you know, a larger and deeper variety of issues that people might be moving through in that. So I'm just representing you to that day in that conversation, because you actually said something that I never remember hearing. I was feeling like I couched it. I didn't say I never remember, or I never, you never said it. I never remember you saying it. And it was
right.
this idea about doing your work and taking breaks from doing your work, and then going back and doing work and maybe taking breaks from your work. And as you were describing it, the idea of yo-yo dieting came in my mind, because it sounded similar to that, because as you were talking more about it, you said that people lose ground in that pattern. And I kind of wanted you to expand more on that, because it seems like any work that I do to heal or release some aberrant energy that gone for good, there might be deeper layers to release. And so even if there was a hiatus, it seems like the next time I resume momentum that I pick up and keep cleaning up where I left off. Not that I would lose ground. So I just kind of wanted you to clarify some things around that for me.
Well, I've seen people who will do a piece of work and then realize that they can be finished with that, but actually go back and pick it up and play the pattern out again. And there is and I can't even say who it was. This thought has been in my mind, or it came to me, you know, decades ago in doing this work in the early days when it was just like an opening to hear it. And that was that every idea that does not become an ideal slays a power within you. In other words, it seems like energetically, when we are exposed to a higher level of understanding and choose to ignore that understanding, refuse to live by that understanding, then it weakens a part of us. So it seems like, you know, maybe it has to do, and I'm not 100% sure, but maybe it has to do with energetic accountability, that every idea that does not become an ideal, in other words, if I engage in a higher understanding, I got to put it to work. I can't just, you know, leave it over in the corner and go, well, I heard about that one, but I'm not doing it. So according to that thesis, then it weakens us. So that would be my reason for speaking in that direction.
Okay. I think I'm going to simmer on that because I don't really have anything to comment right now, because like I want to kind of contemplate like either examples of myself or my clients where I've seen a similar pattern. And, I guess I'll leave it at that.
Well, it ties in also to an axiom in law where, you know, one of the inquiries about the guilt or innocence under the legal system is always about what was the intent, what was the knowledge of the individual. And without the knowledge, there isn't the same level of accountability as there is with the knowledge. And so for me, that would tie in as well.
Okay, I mean, that I'm familiar with, and, you know, the level of responsibility that it brings, because not everybody has the access. And so, all right, well, I'm going to, it would have been one of those people in Asheville, North Carolina area. I had this ticket that I bought that apparently I didn't buy. So I thought I was going to be there.
Oh, really? But you're not now?
Yeah. No. I had some of this round trip ticket to Atlanta for like $60. And so when I looked on the map, I realized how close it was. I was going to Atlanta for other reasons.
It is.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing to keep in hand. So, well,
come on down.
Well, if not now, we'll see you in September. Thank you. Bye.
All right. You have a blessed one. Okay, Jeannie, you can another hand up.
Yes, the next one, I believe, is Brenda in Memphis 901. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you all doing?
Well, hey there, young lady. How's that little one doing?
She's doing just fine. She's home, and everything seems to be okay. And we'll clear out the antibiotics at some later date.
Well, we certainly hold the space for that. Did you get to watch that video on microbirth?
Yes, I did. It was excellent. I sent you a text and said that I don't know that they have. I gave it to them. They said they would watch it, and I'm giving a little time to ask if they actually did yet. So
sure.
I'm going to.
And anybody that's listening.
Yes.
Go ahead. Seeing as I mentioned, I just want to put out there for anybody that's listening, you might want to jump on Amazon and or it may be on Netflix or what have you. I don't know. There's a video called Microbirth. Very powerful understanding of the microorganisms that are involved in human life, and without them, how deep we can get ourselves into trouble. And they make the point right down to where now in circles where they have this level of understanding in the medical community, they're realizing that when a child being born comes through the birth canal, that it's inoculated with thousands of different organisms that it needs to have an immune system and to have life. To the point where, if a child is being born by C-section, they're actually putting swabs in the vagina of the mother, absorbing the microorganisms that are designed to inoculate the child, and then they're swabbing the child's whole body, face, nose, eyes, mouth, ears, with these vaginal secretions that are designed to give the child the life that it needs. And that's a powerful new level of understanding. And, of course, we live in a world of where we get promoted every day that these antibiotics that are out there are wonderful things and are really there to help us. But in fact, and in some cases, certainly they can be life-saving. But if we kill off the organisms that are designed to support our life force, then we can be in trouble. And of course, the word antibio is antibiotic, means anti-life. And when you kill off life without replacing, without replenishing it, then there tends to be trouble long-term within the human organism. So just something to understand, and the indiscriminate use of antibiotics, how devastating that can be. In this country, over 70% of the antibiotics used in this country are used on animals. And the majority of those antibiotics are not used for medicinal purposes. The majority of those antibiotics are given to the animals prophylactically, and it makes them grow faster, cheaper. It saves a buck. So they fill these animals, nothing to do with health. They're preventing disease, but they fill these animals with antibiotics. And what happens is they put on weight, so they're worth more money when they're slaughtered and sold for food. Of course, what the quality of food is at that point is questionable, So you might want to, you know, think about that one, but how crazy it is. And the people who, even in the medical world, are studying antibiotics are starting to say, we got to stop. We got to slow this down. We got to put a handle on this because we're in trouble on planet Earth, these superbugs, because we're poisoning. And when you poison something, it adapts. And when it adapts, it gets stronger and it is able to refuse the poison. So the indiscriminate use, and especially the use with animals, and then the residues that are left over that are eaten by the humans that eat those animals, leave us in a place where, you know, when there is an organism that needs to be controlled through antibiotic use, it's not going to be happening. In fact, there's a major British study that says that by 2050, if we keep going the way we are with antibiotics, then we're going to find that there are going to be more people dying of antibiotic-resistant bugs than die of cancer today. And that's a tragedy. And, of course, the people whose brain cells are totally fitted and focused around antibiotics, their answer is, well, what we need to do, you know, there's a problem with these bugs. We need to develop stronger antibiotics. And it's a total, complete fallacy. No, there isn't a problem with the bugs. There's a problem with the antibiotics. The problem isn't the bugs. So a stronger antibiotic just means we're going to develop an even more resistant bug. We need to start to change our thinking and become responsible for our health and feed and nourish the system in a way that supports its aliveness rather than, well, we've got a pill to fix that. So you might want to watch that video. It helps to educate and build some new brain cells to be looking in a deeper, different direction about health and what it really means to have this human form and have it functioning as it's designed to. So my apologies, Brenda, for distracting, but it seemed like that might be an appropriate thing for people to just have a little taste of. So what's on your mind, young lady? How can we support you today?
Well, I'm going to go off track. I'm going to continue with your track. I'll just say briefly that it was interesting when you mentioned about St. Cher's streetwalker along the street, because that's exactly what I did this morning on the way to work, was I observed what was happening. And so I was able, in the Course in Miracles lessons today was a review lesson. I'm not a body, I'm free for I'm as God created me. And also I am blessed as I bless. And so that's what I did with both the parties involved in this transaction or interaction. So it was nice to have you just give me a supportive aha, give me five on the show of doing that work. So thank you for that. But I did want to go back to the video, because two of the interesting things about that video was about the C-sections and how in Latin America, 80 or 90% of the births are done by C-section, which is higher than any other country in the world. And so that was very surprising.
Brazil, I'm not sure that would be Latin America in general, but I think if I remember correctly, it's Brazil, where there's a whole lot of focus
maybe
on antibody, and it better be good.
Yeah, that could be the case. And so that I was surprised about that, and that was done convenient, not necessity. And then the other thing that was surprising, was interesting to me, was not only, C-sections are done, say, in those places, and many times, so the mother doesn't have to go through the labor process and the pain and everything, but they're finding that the immune system of the child is enhanced with that labor and that pain, which was something very, very interesting, and I'd never heard that again. So I would say anybody who knows anybody who's thinking about having a C-section, or, you know, that doesn't have to, or, you know, such like that, really take a look at what the downline ramifications. And it's not just after the child is born, but 50, 60 years down the road, they're finding that there's effects of it, an increase in diabetes, celiac disease, and such like that. So it's well worth
us all looking at. And let me see. Oh, okay. So now go back to the other
thing
I was going to tell
before you
about,
Before you go on to another topic, hold for just a second. Just another thought or two. Sure. And that is that it's not the pain. It's not the pain of labor that focuses or supports the child's strength and ability and immunity. It's that it goes through. It seems that the pressures and the stress that one's put under physiologically prepares the structure of the child to learn to gather information and strength from its environment in a way that otherwise won't happen. And there's more learned by the child in the first hour of its life than any hour of the rest of its life when it goes through that natural birth process. If we go into, say, for instance, a good analogy or a good way to get a bigger picture of it, if we are there when a butterfly is about to be born and it's, the chrysalis is starting to crack open, we go, oh, I'm going to go help, and we tear the chrysalis open, guess what? That butterfly will never fly. Because what they've discovered is when it goes under the physical stress of breaking open the chrysalis, what happens is the butterfly's wings inflate and he can fly. If he doesn't get to do that, it's never going to fly. So when we interrupt the natural process, you know, that's kind of the focus of naturopathy, the field I'm trained in, is that there are natural mechanisms designed into the system that, you know, it's kind of like the sorcerer's apprentice. When we don't comprehend it, we decide we're going to make it up differently, we end up in trouble. And so really paying attention to the natural process can be a big part of tapping into what's really designed to happen within the system. And my understanding in Brazil, especially with the C-sections, is that a lot of it is about the macho expectations of women's bodies not being distorted by birth, and that you know, like the number of plastic surgeries down there is outrageous, and it's all about this woman has to have the perfect body, the perfect vagina, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, that's a big part of what's happening in there, that the belief that we are a body rather than valuing ourselves as human beings and who we are. Go ahead, Jeannie.
I was just going to say, I was getting texts also that, you know, besides the baby picking up the flora, the fauna that it needs from birth now, and the bacterial dosing, that going through the natural birth also squeezes water out of the respiratory system, which doesn't happen in a C-section. And so there's a lot of aspects to that.
Yeah, that should be there.
Definitely. And Brenda, unfortunately, we've used up most of your time doing side topics, but let's continue the topic on Monday. We're down to the last minute, so we're going to have to close the show up, but let's continue on Monday and get to the next level of the conversation. My apology for the fact that we don't have more time. So, everybody, we hold the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. And, Brenda, we look forward to hearing the rest of what your thoughts are. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.